views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
You are listening to The Tracy L. Clark Show with me, Tracy L., where I'm going to empower you and teach you how to live your extraordinary life. Tune in every Tuesday, 8 a.m. Pacific, on Transformation Talk Radio, where I combine ministry, science, and spirituality to reveal the steps you need to let go of your perceived limitations. Have you had the limiting self-talk over and over? Have you noticed you allow your fears to hold you back? If you're truly ready for change, I invite you to join me, Tracy L. Clark, and start your journey of transformation now. Welcome to the Tracy L. Clark Show. I'm your host, Tracy L., and I'm so excited today. We have an incredible guest with us. I want to just let you know, if you haven't checked out the website, tracylclark.com, take a moment, and there is an audio there that will help to shift and sift you. As a body regeneration specialist, I have worked with over 12,000 individual people, allowing them to shift their life by being in tune with their life. And I know what the feedback that we get from you guys, the reason we bring our guests on is to help you also see new perspectives, expand your awareness, and maybe perhaps go into an area you never thought possible. And we always talk about making the impossible possible. That's what we do. But today, our guest, I'm so excited, is Mark Dober, and this is his book. And Mark, I'm going to welcome you, The End to Upside Down Thinking. Love the title. So thank you for joining us for this hour today. So
thank you for having me.
You know, your book is new. Obviously, just came out in the fall. And I like that you've taken a science approach. But what I love about this is you graduated from Princeton and you're a businessman. This was not part of your world, what, 2 years ago? Almost, it's 2016, so we're probably entering about two and a half years. So reading your book and going through the science behind it, and I want to get into a little bit more why you know, your wake-up moment of, oh my gosh, what did I just learn? You talk about telepathy. You talk about remote viewing. You talk about near-death experiences, which we talk a lot about on the show. And you back it up with the science, but my number one, before we get into why you wrote this, how has writing this book changed your way of life and your thinking and your perceptions? Because with the training and the background you would have had, would have been very different from what you wrote here. Mm-hmm. A world you probably went, what did I stumble on? How did that change your perceptions and your way of life, your way of being now?
It's changed things dramatically. And I would say that my worldview and way of thinking changed before I wrote the book. Yeah. I ended up, when I first stumbled across these topics in 2016, I was just researching because I wanted to understand this whole subject matter. I had no intention of writing a book or being in any way public with this stuff.
Surprise! Like how the universe does that.
Yeah, now here we are. But at first it was just a matter of trying to understand the topics, and it was a year of nonstop reading and listening to podcasts and YouTube videos. But I would say the biggest shift for me has been in the way I think about meaning in life. So the way I used to think about life, and I think this is a pretty mainstream view today in 2019, is that life had no meaning. Because the universe is totally random. We emerged due to chemical reactions in this big universe, and randomly DNA came about, and DNA led to our evolution, and we developed brains. And from our brain comes our mind and our consciousness, our awareness. So if you buy into that train of thinking, then when your brain and your body shut off, when you die, then your consciousness must be gone. So no memories, no emotions, no feelings. And because of that, I had a very hard time coming up with any meaning in life, because I knew that in the end, consciousness would go away. So any meaning I would try to come up with was a rationalization. And that has been the biggest shift for me, because I think that thinking I used to have is not correct.
Yeah. And I love that, because when there's no reason or purpose or why are we here or journey, I believe from what I see, that's why a lot of people just are bored, depressed. You know, they're like, why, what's the purpose?
Yeah. And I think it's not an irrational way of thinking based on the education system and the science that we're taught. That's the thing. So I don't think I was irrational.
No, you weren't. And that actually brings me to a point reading this, because one of the things that did stand out is exactly what you just said. And I say this a lot, so maybe I'm a little biased, but the systems and the educational system of what we teach seems to be a very narrow point of view based on how the constructs of that system wants to keep you sort of in line with that system. And that's what I like about your title, The End to Upside Down Thinking, is because if you, and you know this through science, we only use such a small percentage of our brain and what it can do. We can't control the mental thoughts, even when people do or get into meditation. There's a slight way, but there's a lot of thoughts that just go there randomly. And I would say the hard drive. So now the research and where we see even energetically more is being created out here through our heart than through our mental space, which is very, they don't even talk about that in school. They don't even talk about, like, you talk about remote viewing in here. I remember 15 years ago, and I want to jump in it, when I met someone and I was like, what? And I got really curious, and he was a remote viewer in the US government. And long story, kind of messed him up, long story, but they don't talk about things of intuition or creation or, you know, how we're creating, rather than it's get up, go to work, go to school, get your education, be a little drone, take what we've told you. And I'm not saying it's not relevant, some of that information, and then just go to work and pay your taxes. You just exploded all of these in here. You did. So how did you come up with the title? I think I know, but what was your reason for the title? Because it's a great title.
The title has to do with triangles that are included in the preface of the book. And the triangles lay out the conventional thinking, which I basically just described, which says that the universe starts with physical material that we call matter. There was a Big Bang 13.8 billion years ago, filled the universe with atoms of matter. And then through the chain I described, we got DNA through chemical reactions that were just randomly occurring, leading to the evolution of a human being, which develops a brain, and then consciousness comes out at the end. So this is called materialism because the universe is fundamentally material, and matter, material, creates consciousness through a brain. That's the conventional view. And that's what I am now regarding as upside down thinking, by moving consciousness to the very beginning of the chain. So consciousness is primary, existing beyond all space and time, and is really the foundation of the physical world.
Yeah, and I like what you say about time. We always say there's ways of time, space, universe, dimensions, galaxies, like all of this. And we've been so stuck into that linear way of being. You know, like, you get up, I get up, the clocks, it's, you know, we're 3 hours ahead of you. Everybody's kind of in this time. And when you learn to actually, that you are able to shift and maneuver around time, it actually changes your whole reality. And what I like is that in every section, I want to ask you what, actually, before I ask you this question, what was your, I know all the sections are great and you dove into, but what's one of your most favorite topic that you really started to dive deep in when you were writing the book and exploring and went, oh my gosh, I wish I'd known this like 10 years ago, because there's a lot of listeners that, and the thing with your book, very practical, where people just, for years, it's been, that's hooey wooey, or that intuition stuff doesn't matter. Or, like, I've seen it in corporations, you walk in, people change their way of thinking, they change how they connect, how everybody is connected, they become more inclusive, and all of a sudden their corporations are changing, they're making more money. And so when you were writing this, was there one part that really, really caught you that went, oh my gosh, I got this all wrong, and now I got to open my perception to a new way of thinking?
Mm. I think the near-death experience and everything around that. That to me is such a big deal. And in particular, the life review that people describe, where they're in these states where their brain is either entirely off or it's extremely impaired, and no one under the conventional views should have a lucid or logical thought process. And yet people are hovering over their bodies and seeing things in the room that are later verified as being accurate. But in that process, they have a life review where they're judging themselves for how they acted at different points in their life. But to me, the biggest kicker there is that sometimes they experience those events or re-experience them through the eyes of the people that they have affected in their life. Yeah. And so they feel the pain they inflicted on other people. And this is reported over and over again. So that's a very world-changing type of idea. And what's interesting there is that the person is judging him or herself. There's no third party judging.
No.
And exactly. The harshest judge is the self.
Yeah. And I think too, even in our everyday waking life, we are the harshest on who we are. And, you know, we're our own worst critics, right? So to speak. And I think that, so understanding that process and hearing it and seeing it, and I'm very familiar with it, is that it really makes you look at life and how you treat people differently and what those consequences are. I think it gives more meaning. And did you find that it started to give more meaning to how you functioned every day, to how you contributed into the world as just a being, as a person? Because, and the reason I ask that is because all the areas you touch on here really come back to giving a new scientific evidence approach to how everybody's connected. We hear that a lot in the world. People throw the word out. Oh, you're all one. Everybody's connected. You hear it a lot in the spiritual world, not so much in the corporate world. But it's true, because you are connected even in your corporate world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you're an entity. You are energy. You are all talking to each other, whether you're in the same room or not.
Yes. I think that's one of the biggest takeaways from the book for me, is that all of these independent areas of study, whether it's a near-death experience or telepathy or remote viewing, it suggests this level of interconnectivity that we don't see with our eyes. So that to me has been a big life changer, to appreciate the idea that we appear to be separate because that's what our eyes show us and we interpret separation. But when we actually look at the science, and when you look at people's individual experiences, whether it's in a near-death experience or other altered states, it's all pointing towards kind of a oneness. And the consciousness that I have is no different than the consciousness of anybody else. It's just that we're having different localized experiences. And an analogy that I use in the book that might be helpful for your listeners is from Dr. Bernardo Kastrup, who says, to imagine that all of reality is like a stream of water, where water represents consciousness. So we're all part of the stream, but each of us is like a whirlpool. So we have like a localized experience. We have boundaries, even though we're all connected and we're made of water.
Yeah.
So thinking of life like that, rather than just separate islands that have no connection, that can be a very profound life-changing idea.
It is very profound, because it gives people a beautiful visualization, because we always say, you know, you're going with the flow, you're going through the streams, because you are all sort of the when people do big transitions like this, they're like, oh, I'm on the island by myself. And I'm like, no, you're not. You're still, you know, you got to get into the flow of where everybody else is, how you connect, how you move that through. And so tell the listeners, because being in the world you are in, coming from this, you know, more business corporate background that you're in, because you're still, that's your primary business still, right? Yeah. You're still in banking. That's your space. Mm-hmm. And so what was the moment where you sort of had this realization and said, oh my gosh, I'm looking at the world differently. I need to get this out. I need to write this. What was that trigger moment for you where you just knew you had to really let people know that what you found, especially because you've gotten so much science data, which a lot of people in corporate world need the science data to be able to validate, so they don't think you're hooey-wooey. They don't think this is nonsense, because it's all put in that camp. And I believe it's put in that camp so people won't connect fully with their bodies. And what you've done here is you've exploded this whole realm in science to say, stop, people. Like, we have scientific evidence that these people are not crazy. Now, there are a lot of crazies. I'm not saying there's not. But so what was that moment that hit you where you went, oh my gosh, I got to get this out?
I first became exposed to the topics in August of 2016, was researching for about a year, and it was the summer of 2017, after doing a lot of research and after starting to tell friends and family members about the research I was doing. At first, I didn't want to talk to anybody about it, because I had never heard of these things, and it was so disorienting. Eventually, I felt comfortable enough with the science that I decided to start telling people about it, and the reactions were really positive, and these were from very mainstream people. And they were saying, wow, these ideas are like life-changing. And then they would tell me weeks or months later that they were still thinking about the dinner that we had and the research that I was telling them about. And meanwhile, I was still researching myself and really interested and like frustrated that I was learning these things and I had never been taught them throughout all my education and business. And I was like, how could I have not have even known these things? Yeah. So I had an inclination, I think, to write something in June of 2017. And I said, nah, it's going to be a lot. I work in business. I'm not going to do that. And then I had a dinner with a few friends. A buddy was in from out of town, and like three of us got together, and I was mentioning the idea, and they were like, you should do it. And I said, okay, I'm going to take the 4th of July weekend and see what happens. And that was a 4-day weekend in 2017. Wow. So I just locked myself in my apartment in San Francisco, had books everywhere, didn't leave. And ended up finishing more than half of a draft that weekend, and then finished the full draft by the end of the month. So it happened very quickly.
Yeah, that's definitely what we call channeling fast. We need to get it out. And so that actually brings a good question up, because writing something like this, it's so out of mainstream. And you said, you know, I'm never taught this. Now I'm having to learn on my own, which mostly in this area, people are learning on their own, right? So what was, and I like this because you kind of went, I know I need to get this out. Like, you had an inner knowing that said, I need to get this out, because you could have said, and I want people to really get this, because this is a year of reinvention, transformation, and getting rid of doubt. You could have just said, if I write this book, so you could have said, if he writes this, they'll think I'm all crazy and what's that going to be? So I'm just going to not do it. And that wasn't even a thought for you.
Mm-mm.
No. It was, you knew you had to get this out for mainstream, for people that couldn't quite, they just wouldn't be able to open their minds enough, their bodies, their souls, their spirit to say, what? What's he talking about? Telepathy? What? Intuition? Like, you had no hesitation.
No. And I think it's because I knew the potential impact it could have on people in the same way that my whole life was transformed. I wanted to make that process easier for people. So whereas I had to spend a year of doing nothing but research, and I'm still constantly researching, but
never ending.
It's never ending. It's a bottomless pit. But the resources are very spread out. And I wanted to make the process easier by summarizing everything in a book where someone could read the book. And then it's the sort of thing where you can't unsee or unhear something. That's how I felt when I was researching. Like, I couldn't just wipe something out of my mind. I wanted to put all that in one place. The other thing I'll say about not being afraid to put it out is that as one internalizes these concepts of interconnectivity and really appreciating what reality actually is and not what we are taught to think it is or what our eyes show us it is, that seems to be part of the, like, I don't know, cosmic purpose. The more I research that, this idea of like the evolution of consciousness comes up a lot. So to me, if you like buy into this bigger picture of the universe and reality, then there's, what is there for me to be afraid of? If someone doesn't like what I'm writing, that's from a perspective that probably doesn't have the bigger picture in mind.
Correct.
So to me, it didn't actually seem very risky.
Yeah, you knew you just had to go out there. And I think that is like, that's brilliant, because that's about that knowing, right? It's like what you just said, the big picture. I like what you said about as well, because quite often, for a lot of our listeners, and we have a broad base, but it's, you know, you talk about the eyes, what we see, right? And how a lot of people say, oh, they're the window to the soul. That's what we see. And quite often what we just see is not actually what we're perceiving, what we're feeling. And the way our systems have been ingrained, even our education system, it's what you see. Well, what do you see? So what does that reflect back? What do you see? What does that reflect back? What are you reading, right? How is that reflecting back? And I like how when you talk about, and we said this just before we got going, and I want to talk about a little bit of the intuition part, because you have that great piece. I just saw that I opened it. I was like, oh my gosh, I had no idea. So we're always talking, well, I talk a lot about intuition and opening and feeling. And you've made a piece in the book there about intuition, about how on 9/11, they had a lot lower capacity rates on the plane. And I like how you say, is that like a knowing, because talking about, you know, the telephone ringing, you just know, is it random? And what that started to open up, and I want to know how you've noticed this. Once you pay attention to stuff like that, don't you notice that it happens more now? Now that you've written this and that you're paying attention, you're watching, not with your eyes, but you're feeling and you're listening, that those don't seem so random anymore.
Mm-hmm. That was one of the first things that happened to me. is the crazy intuition, synchronicities. And it's something that I find with people that are close to me, as they become exposed to the topics, all of a sudden, like intuition, synchronicity opens up a lot more. I'm not sure why, but it's like a tapping in that happens as soon as people are exposed to this information. At least anecdotally, I've seen that.
No, absolutely. And what I noticed about the book, and I always say it's like riding a bike. Once you learn to ride a bike, you can't unlearn. Like even if you haven't ridden a bike for 10 years, you still know how to ride the bike. So when reading this, what I noticed is there is an energy behind it that actually starts to open up what I call the innate system, right? So your central nervous system, your vagus, your intrinsic, like that innate system starts to open up. And you actually, I don't know if anyone's mentioned this to you, maybe you felt it or seen it, but you're actually getting them out of the head and into the feeling center through the science of the book.
Very happy to hear you say that. I was hoping that would be the case, but I didn't.
No one said that to you yet. Yay! Because I noticed it. It's like, and that's why I said it's interesting that you talk about the eyes here, because the information in the book is more about, it really opens up to the feeling center and asking that question, okay, well, what else then? What else is out there? Like you kind of, you touch on such great topics, like I said, of expanding the awareness in the body. But now it's like, now there's all these other insights. You're going to have people going, well, I need more. There's unanswered questions.
Yes.
Can I ask you, what did it feel like even going through? And I do want to bring this up because a bunch of people have been asking me about the remote viewing and exploring that and understanding. And the reason there, I'm not sure if you realize this, but what you've written in here with the remote viewing, actually, how can I say this? I'm not going to cross lines there. Is that it really showed the truths that we're not being told. And it really actually opens a space in the energetic field to expand into more awareness, to demand more truths from the systems we're in, whether it's government, school, whatever that is. So my question is basically, when you were writing that piece and exploring, did you notice any different triggers? Because it really, when you wrote this in the book, and that's why I want to bring it up, it does. It really brought up a lot of energy of what else aren't they telling us that we really need to know to expand who we are to create a better life as humans on this planet.
Well, the way I was thinking about the book in general as I wrote it was to try to bring in as much credibility as I could. Mm-hmm. Because of the reasons you've stated, a lot of people need the credibility if they haven't had a personal experience. They need that in order to open the door. So that's what I wanted this to be about. And the reason that the first evidence-based chapter was on remote viewing mm-hmm. was that the fact that the U.S. government has run a program for more than 20 years on this, that is very significant because it's so practical. I think for many people, that means more than a peer-reviewed journal study.
100%.
Right. So when you see documents that I was able to download from the CIA's website, which have been declassified.
I know. I was surprised. I was like, what? Like, and then I realized there is a time period, right? Where it gets released. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's been decades. And one of the documents explicitly says remote viewing is a real phenomenon. Yeah. And the implications are revolutionary. And they show the scientific council that looked into this. So again, remote viewing, for your listeners who aren't familiar, it's the ability to perceive something that is far away. So you've never seen it before with your eyes, and yet with your mind, you can access it and like draw it out on a piece of paper. So the U.S. government was using this technology, basically, people that were very skilled at this, using their mind for national security, basically as psychic spies.
Yes. And it's interesting because as I was reading your book and going through it, I was having those flashes of, you know, all these science fiction shows that we've seen, which we know, right? You look at, was it Minority Report? Was that the one with the cognitive thinkers
yes.
in the pool? So stuff like that. And I was like, wow, you know, you read it. And because you've backed it up with so much science and evidence within the book that way, you start to realize that even what we're watching and what's been putting into our programming is actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening. Yeah,
that really shocked me, is that it makes me think, rethink science fiction and a lot of these things that just seemed like they were out there, impossible ideas. There is scientific backing, at least for statistical small effects of some of these things.
Yeah. And I think there's a place now where I always say sciences are like the science fiction movies are our future. And when you actually read your book, you start to understand that it really is. And because there isn't a lot of, and what I want the listeners to understand, there aren't a lot of books that I have found. Like, we can find very science-oriented books, right? And people that just, it's here's the science, the facts, heavy data books. You can find a lot of spiritual books that are just about connecting and oneness. And then I would say in the ministries, I do see a lot around, you know, religion and the breaking down of that paradigm. But you don't see a lot of books like yours that are written in the sense that you can actually... One, anybody, any of you listening to this and watching this on the YouTube and stuff, you can read through this and understand every word on it. But there aren't, I can't find, and maybe I just haven't had them to my attention to clarify that, where there's actually books that actually are able to back up science and spirituality together. You did a good job mixing the two.
Thank you for saying that. It was one of my goals as I was writing it, because like you, I saw different ends of the spectrum. As I was researching, I would see very scientific books that were really good, but I knew they wouldn't appeal to just a general.
The masses, which actually need that. They need this. Like, if you're not a science brain, you're not going to understand most of the information out there of what you were able to take and put into bits for people to reference back. But if you're not thinking that way and you're just going to work and doing your thing every day and thinking that life is just here to die and there you go and there's no purpose, then you wouldn't understand or be able to wrap your head around most of that literature that is out there.
Right. And then on the other end of the spectrum, there are books that, like you say, are just very spiritual or they're very anecdotal and haven't been rigorously examined. And those books will not appeal to those who need evidence. So I wanted to write something in the middle.
Yes.
And that was my goal.
And you did it. You did it very well, because you can, like I said, you can have the, for people to really understand. And I know I was a lot like this when I first started out in this, I don't call it just a spiritual space or path, is I kept saying, show me the science, show me the science. Like, I was so jaded. I was like, and for anybody listening, if you're in that path where you're like, I was pretty much almost an atheist, but now I really started to app. Now I'm like, okay, I get it all. But for people that are listening, if you don't understand or you're saying like that, my life has sucked. I don't understand how I can be connected to other people. How can I create? And, you know, are the things that I've learned real? I want to encourage you to pick this book up, because what Mark did, what you've done is you kind of put together all of the information to be able to, like I said, back the science, like I need it. There's a lot of people that are, like you said, so jaded. They don't just want to sit there and meditate. And that, to me, is extremely brilliant. And I want you to talk about this paradigm. Now, this pyramid that you put in the front here. We talked about it a little bit briefly. I'm going to show it to the people that can actually to view. And like you were talking earlier, it's sort of like the Big Bang Theory and consciousness and connecting. And can you explain, like, was this your pyramid when you really started to look at this? What were some of the aha moments when you realized that this had to be inverted from the way we were teaching?
Well, at first I didn't think about it in the sense of the pyramid. That was something that came later. And actually Dr. Dean Radin, who's one of the leading scientists in this area, has used something similar in his recent book, and I adapted from that. So that overall framework came much later. It started for me with individual phenomena that I couldn't explain, that I was hearing about. So in August of 2016, I heard a psychic on a podcast on a health show called Extreme Health Radio. I wasn't even consciously trying to hear about a psychic. And I heard about her experiences. Then I listened to more podcasts like it on the show Healing Powers. And then I heard more and more podcasts like it. So I heard people that were having psychic experiences, or they were communicating with the deceased, or they had a near-death experience. And then it was the bringing all of it together where I realized the issue centered around the brain and consciousness, and trying to understand how the brain could ever produce our consciousness, which is what science is trying to do, and saying, wait a second, maybe consciousness doesn't come from the brain at all. And our brain is like a filtering mechanism or like an antenna receiver. And the consciousness doesn't come from our body in the first place, but we are kind of absorbing and processing it. So that, once I understood that linchpin area, that it's about the brain and consciousness, then everything fell into place. And this idea that I I call an end to upside down thinking, that consciousness is just the primary aspect of reality. That came later as I tried to bring everything together.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's so true. It's interesting as well, even though our bodies and our vessels are beautiful beings, they're here to house us, but they also know what to do. They know how to take care of themselves, which also comes back into the consciousness, because you look and say, people say to me all the time, well, how come this went away? Or how come I don't have this issue anymore? Or, you know, physical issues. I know I'm a big person who went through a lot of that personally, a lot of physical issues. And I started to realize that I kept trying to think it through my brain. And this is what I like what you touch on here. I was like, before I woke up, I'm like, okay, I'm trying to go through my brain. What do I need to do? What am I not doing? And when I realized that my mental space and the brain were causing, well, not the brain, but the mental space was causing more of the issues for my body not regenerating, that I started to, that's where I started to realize, like what you're saying in here, is that we're creating constantly. But I think we only know like this much of what we're really creating and interacting with right now. But I also, because of the topics you've touched on here, and we're in this massive period where people are wanting more, they want more truth like this of what you've written, and understanding that the body is this vessel, you're saying, the near death. And when you leave, there is a processing, there is a review, there is a soul, there is a spirit, and we're just here for this time. And one of the things I love is that it really also shows how we as souls and spirit do come back. Mm-hmm. We're not just here dead. Because depending on when you hear the near-death experiences, when you hear the encounters, and then you realize that nothing is really random, like, you know how everybody believes, oh, it's just random, it's just a coincidence, but that we're here to learn, we're here to contribute, we're here to pay attention, we're here to listen, we're here to really make humanity more connected and more, you know, heartfelt and centered. And I think your part there too, what I really liked about the near-death experiences, and really shows and debunk a lot of stuff when people are like, oh, reincarnation would suck and that's not true. You're just here to die and that's it. Did you realize how much you touched on that to really give some scientific evidence that we do, if we choose, I guess, to come back over and over?
Yeah, it's a really important topic because I had never even thought about reincarnation in a serious way. I had maybe heard of it a few times as kind of like a joke almost, because according to the conventional worldview, it doesn't make any sense. If your brain produces your consciousness, then once you die, how can that consciousness then be recycled almost? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But if we shift the perspective and say we're all these whirlpools in a stream of consciousness, then it's like one whirlpool dissolves, i.e. the body dies, and then some of that water ends up in a new whirlpool. So it's like this whole stream evolving itself through different experiences. And it seems like reincarnation is one way of achieving that. And we'll talk about the evidence in a second, but just conceptually, if we think about our life, we come into the body with nothing physical. And when we leave the body, there's nothing that we have physical. But the question is, does the consciousness continue? And now I would argue science suggests it does. So all that actually continues is your consciousness and the way in which it has evolved. And I think that's what the life review is starting to show us, is that we're trying to grow ourselves and see how we can behave in this physical realm. It seems like, to me, reincarnation is another vehicle of this evolution. And the strongest research is from the University of Virginia. Mm-hmm. And they've run studies for more than 50 years at their Division of Perceptual Studies at the med school. And they've looked at over 2,500 cases of young children who are usually between the ages of 2 and 5 years old, who spontaneously start talking about a life that is not theirs. And the details are so distinct and vivid that the researchers are sometimes able to find the person that the child is describing.
I have met kids like that. It's freaky.
Right. They're so young and they have these vivid details. And to me, the most compelling cases are the ones where children have birthmarks and physical deformities that match the way they describe dying, and where the researchers in some cases can find the medical records of a person that died and line it up.
That's just it. And for people listening, I can just tell energy, they're like, whoa, wait a minute here. And you know, you just said something and I want the listeners to get it. 50 years they've been studying this. 50 years. How come nobody's talking about it? Like, you know, this is where I go, this is so time, because these children a lot of times get discounted. You're crazy. You had a dream. What's wrong with you? And we have, you just have 50 years where you meet these kids, or like you say, they have birthmarks and it's like they can trace it back. And we're, I always call it the ladder of life. So, you know, we're moving, we're shifting, we're learning, then we go, we can come back at a different level, you know, experience different things, contribute different ways to humanity. A lot of times, I think a lot of us that are in this area, like, you know, helping people learn and understand, I always say we're the ones that probably way back when messed up all the systems. So now we got to come back and set it right. But again, back to these systems, do you believe that, like, when you go out and you talk about your book and you're in a lot of different circles, I know now in the expansion, do you really think that, I believe that this book will be part of a catalyst to change, to get a lot of our educational systems to start to change too? And what we're teaching children, it might be slow, but we got to start somewhere. Do you ever see that or feel that? Because children, when especially like what you just said, there's scientific proof that they're coming back and talking about other lives, but most of these kids are getting discounted. Look at all the information that's being lost because it doesn't fit in a book that's in a school system.
Mm-hmm. Well, before I get to your question, I want to mention a recent article that came out on this topic of children with past life memories in the International Journal of Sexual Health. One of the researchers from the University of Virginia, Dr. Jim Tucker, who studies children with past life memories, they found a strong relationship between gender nonconformity and past life memories. Meaning you're a little boy and you have behaviors that are like a girl. It's strongly related to memories of being a girl in a previous life. International Journal of Sexual Health. So my point in saying that is that these things, I guess, are starting to be accepted.
Yeah, International Journal of Sexual Health. And that's a recent article, you said.
It's within the last few months.
Wow.
It's on gender nonconformity, Dr. Jim Tucker and a few others. So I think there is a bit of a shift. The fact that any journal would allow something like that is new. But I am hoping with the book that it will shift the education system. And I actually received an email recently, a student at a mainstream university in the U.S. who was at a lecture with a professor who is a big shot in his area. And he ran a whole lecture on explaining how ESP and phenomena like it are not real. This is a very smart professor saying that these things just don't exist at all. When I talk about a number of these individuals in the book who say that there's no evidence. So, but this student stood up and said, well, are you aware of this study and this study and this study? Because he had read the book.
He read your book.
Yeah. And the professor said, no, I'm not familiar with those. Can you send them to me? And I'm hoping that is a kind of a microcosm of what will happen.
Hence why you'll write six more. No, it's, he's like, slow down. You know what? And this goes back to exactly, and I hope that our listeners will really, especially if you have children, have them listen to this, and because they can read it, like young kids, 18, 17, 16, they can read this, no problem. It's not a book that you have to guys be like way up here to understand. But you just touched on a really interesting point about that student standing up. So here's a professor teaching, probably say it, but my ex-husband's a professor, so I know they all do this, teaching notes from how many years ago or how much information, right? Old information. There's been no updated information. And so now you've done that. You've put in, well, a lot of the information's been around for a while. You were just able to find it and compile it and put it together. And really, so again, I think that's a big flag, people, that in a lot of our universities, they're recycling old notes, old information, even though they're supposed to be on cutting edge, right? And what is the latest research? What's the latest data to, you know, let the young minds realize that they need to expand?
Yeah, and even I think the mainstream journals that are out there, which I think a lot of people respect for good reason, they put out good research.
Yes.
I'll give an anecdotal case of one of my publicists was reaching out to different periodicals, and this is a very mainstream one who basically said, once he heard the topic, I don't want to look at it. And I said to my publicist, why don't you send him the CIA documents that say remote viewing is real, and the recent paper that came out within the last year from the American Psychological Association's official peer-reviewed journal. It's called The American Psychologist. And it shows that statistically, all of these psychic phenomena are real when we combine all the data. And this is after years of controversy. The journal still approved that article because the statistics were apparently that good. So we sent those to the person who's an editor at this periodical, and he just wouldn't accept it. He said he was amused by the article, and he says that the U.S. government studies are not, he said they're not a scientific body. And basically his response was, well, unless my 35 years in scientific journalism have been an exercise in delusion, .. Wow. And so that, I think, is what's happening. People are really maybe protective of things that they have thought are real. And if that's happening with influential people in the scientific community, we might be able to understand why the ideas have not gotten out there.
Yeah. And I think because also exactly what you just touched on is then there would have to become, and I believe you went through this, like going and reading through the energy of the book, is when you started to tap on these subjects like him, the whole paradigm shifts for him, because now he realizes that everything he's learned is not true. It's like a lie in his perception, rather than it was true for him at that time. And now there's new awarenesses to come into.
Yeah. Right.
And I think that's hard for most of humanity, right? To realize that what everything I learned is not true.
It was hard for me. I will tell you that. It was really hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we do. And we function within our systems so well. In terms of, I'm not saying they're functional, usually they're dysfunctional, but we know how to function within them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you come over with this, it's scary for people.
I think it's scary. It brings in a sense of accountability, especially with the life review. It's like, wait a second, I'm responsible for my actions. And then it also shows that we have greater abilities and basically more power than we thought we had. And that for some people can be exciting, and other people it can be scary.
Yeah. You know, I think it's because you realize that you do hold a lot of inner power. You do hold a lot of ability to maneuver, shift, reinvent, and change your life. It's just mapped out, and that's what you're dealt. Hence why, you know, when we talk about things of intuition, or the simple one that I like to go back, because most people can understand it, is when you think about somebody and they phone you or they call you, or, you know, I do this a lot where I'll have that process. And I've been trained now over years, but when I used to get that thought, I would discount it. Right. And then you'd be like, well, that's crazy. And then it would happen and you'd realize, wait a minute, like you said in your book, is it random? Is it not random? And the more that we allow individuals to understand that it's not random, to run with it, it doesn't mean it's all going to work out the way you think, but we could create whole new paradigms of how we function. And by people understanding the information, you've just opened up on these other areas that would seem wooey, but they're not now the way you put them. They are like, they're concrete. You have a concrete background to them. We can literally take what you've written in here. If people would expand their perceptions, and even these people that are saying, no, that's too much, it's going to break my paradigm. And you can see the world can change if people start to own their own inner power.
Yes. Yeah. And that's another reason why I think I was so compelled to write the book and speak about these topics, because it can be that transformative. And I think we're at a time in human civilization where things are not working. I think we can probably all agree on that it's not
Nothing
working
is.
Very well. And to me, it's not about political leaders or individuals that are committing violence. Those are kind of symptoms.
Yeah.
The underlying disease is this misunderstanding of reality.
Correct. I you know, I'm so glad you said that. It's 100% the problem we have. And people, I always look at it like the political environments or the institutions or the schools, they're just the symptoms. They're, like you say, they're just almost a distraction. They've been sit there almost as a distraction, so people don't take accountability and ownership for, you know, what they can actually create and how they can create it.
Yes, I agree.
Did you ever see that movie, Lucy?
No.
No, Hollywood. It was a Hollywood movie. But what I don't like, there was a lot of violence and stuff within it. But what I do like is they took the concept and they tried to make it mainstream. And reading your book kind of reminded me of that, because it was about how we only use a very, very small part of our brain, right? And when you really start to encompass every part, you can tap into so many things you never imagined, and eventually just kind of get consumed into the matrix and really allow a whole new paradigm shift overnight, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was reading this, and just with some of the science and some of the literature you had backing it, I was like, wow, it kept coming up, because I thought this book actually, guys, will allow you or people listening, an end to upside down thinking, it will shake your world in a sense of you will have to have a few moments if this is new to go, okay, I don't know if I want to continue reading because now everything I have learned isn't real anymore. But what I want to encourage people to pick up the book and read through it is to go open mind and say, if I read this, I can guarantee from going through it, you will actually open the heart center more of creation and the synchronicities are going to come stronger. And I'm going to go back to this point again. I know we've hammered it a lot. How you treat people, how you perceive people, and you said this, is huge. It has an effect when you leave this planet. And I think if people really get that from your book, and if you were like me and you need that scientific evidence, Mark, you've got it in here. There's nothing you missed. Like, you literally made sure everything you said in this book had some sort of scientific backing to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was surprised.
I wouldn't have felt comfortable writing a book with my name on it if I didn't have that. So everything that is stated there, like you say, has a citation. So it's literally not me saying it. It's compiling and summarizing what other people have said. And hopefully the reader can put the pieces together because it's structured in that way where it's like, what else would you conclude? That's my hope at least.
Well, you did a really, really good job of it. I know I'm like, oh my gosh, we're almost done. What is something you really want? And I know we said this at the beginning, but when you really talk about the intuition, getting outside of the mind, getting more connected into the consciousness and the subconscious, the body and the soul and the spirit and how that works. If you had three takeaways that you want people to take away from your book, three, what would, I know there's a million in here, but if you had top three takeaways that you said when they finished reading this book, I hope this is what they can take away. What would that be for you? Well,
the first one I think is a question that anyone who tends to be skeptical would probably ask, which is, well, how can this all be real if there's so many smart scientists out there who are saying these things are not real? How do you reconcile that? And Mark, you're a business guy writing this book and you're challenging Stephen Hawking and Neil deGrasse Tyson and other people who are very credible in these areas. How is that possible? And I think what seems to be the case is that there's resistance to these topics and no one is even immune to that resistance. So I mentioned Brian Josephson, who's a Nobel Prize winner in physics from Cambridge. He was uninvited from a scientific conference because he has interest in telepathy and psychokinesis and these psychic phenomena. And the conference only wanted people that studied scientific topics. So I think that example alone can show how these topics would be swept under the rug. So I think it's important for people to understand that first before opening up. So that's one takeaway, to just kind of understand how this could be, how mainstream science could be so wrong and you still haven't heard about it.
Upside down again.
Yeah. That's one, but more on the internal transformational shift level. I think the notion that consciousness survives bodily death is a really big one. Because if you internalize that idea, it will shift everything. Because then you view this life in a different light. It's like if we're not the body, if the body is just the experience of consciousness, and all we are fundamentally is a consciousness that's experiencing the world through a body. That's a different sense of identity. So my identity right now, when I'm speaking to you, when I say I am speaking to you, Tracy, that consciousness, which is not physical, I can't touch it anywhere, but it is the awareness that's here. That's my identity. And my body is just an experience of that consciousness. It's a flip.
I love what you just said there. I want to actually, guys, you got to hear what you just said there because it's true. I always say everybody should have one near-death experience. It changed your life. I had a couple. So, you know, it changes your life. You're like, ooh, I got to look at things different. But you just said something, and guys, this is so key. Yeah, I am, but there's so much we're experiencing. And just because you can't touch it, you just can't touch, you know, your hand or your head, it doesn't mean it's not happening. It doesn't mean it's not real. It doesn't mean it's not coming into your vibe, into your frequency. Like, that's huge. Just because you can't touch it doesn't mean there's not all this other stuff happening. Mm-hmm. Like, we're having a great conversation on your book for an hour, but it doesn't mean there's not all these other conversations going on up here over and over and over. with not only you and me and who knows how many other millions of people. I don't know, there was a stat, I read it years ago and I can't remember the person, I'm going to apologize right away. I'm sure you could find it. But it was like for every time somebody does a positive shift, it literally affects like a couple hundred thousand people. Which when you start to think about that, that's that whole takeaway too, right? That we're all connected.
Yes. Yeah. And that would lead me to my third takeaway, which is that we are all connected at the level of consciousness. So we have different experiences because we're in these different whirlpools. So it's like a paradox. It's separation within interconnectivity. And there's a phenomenon for your more scientific listeners known as entanglement in quantum physics, which doesn't prove interconnectivity of consciousness, but at least points in that direction. And the basic phenomenon is, and this is like proven now, this is generally accepted science, when you have two particles that are physically separate from each other. So one's here, one is very, very far away. It doesn't matter how far. When you affect one, the other one that's far away is affected at the same exact instant in a correlated way. So it mirrors the other one. So Albert Einstein tried to disprove this. He called it spooky because he thought the speed of light was the fastest that anything could go. And yet we have an instantaneous connection here. So that has been, people have extrapolated, like Dr. Dean Radin, he wrote a book called Entangled Minds. So my point here is that there is even science to suggest that there's interconnectivity beyond even things like telepathy and the life review.
Yeah, the things that we haven't even explored or touched on. Yeah. That I really believe that over the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to see a lot more of this become mainstream. We're going to see a lot more people start to understand. You're hearing it more, like the intuition, or how are we connected, or how do what I do affect what you do, right? Or what I say affect you, even though we're across like different, you know, on one side of the country, like we're on totally opposite ends. And I'm up in Canada, but up and over. But again, like there's all this space, yet there isn't. Like, even though, like I said, there's separation on physical body, but there isn't in terms of the energy that is between the beings, the people, the places, and the things.
Right, right. If we think of consciousness as being beyond space and beyond time, then what we consider to be space and time are really just perceptions. They're like how we interpret the world based on our eyes and our other sensory systems. And we're so bought into that interpretation that we see and experience separation, when in fact, that is not what science is suggesting, at least to me.
I totally agree. It's about integration. Okay, where can our listeners and our viewers, because they see this in different places, we have 90 some outlets we hit. Where can they get your great book? Like, I know Amazon, but you also have your website. Can you give them your website as well?
Yeah, sure. My website is my name, markgober.com, markgober.com. And like you said, the book's available on Amazon, but also Barnes & Noble and many other bookstores.
Yeah, you have it in most, don't you, most mainstream bookstores?
Yes.
Okay, I know. Yeah, it's, I really want to encourage everyone, because to really get a copy of your book. But the one thing I really would like to encourage the listeners, and hopefully I can say this, is get it into your offices. Like, I really think this book needs to be just laid on, you know, CEO's desks, other people's desks, just to, as presents, as gifts, because it's really time that we shift the perceptions, not from what we see, but into what we feel, and the expansion. And your book is an awesome gift throughout the year, a read that you can read over and over. I know you got to go through it again and again, because you have so much stuff in there. You can't just read it once. You can't. It's one of those ones I say you can pick up and you can kind of go, okay, now what do I want to learn, right? I went to animals. We didn't even talk about the animals. The animal psychic abilities, which I'm fascinated, because my cats and I were always having conversations. But I really want to encourage people to really pick up a copy of your book, because it is going to be changing for people who do not have, like you, that really came from a world. If you have people in your lives you're trying to wake up in the sense of, please look into a new perspective or just be open to it, I want to highly encourage you, go get the Mark's book, because it will give the backing that I know I needed to go look for, which I'll tell you guys, 16 years ago was very hard to find in different areas. You put it all in one place.
Thank you very much. Yeah, that's what I was trying to do. And I really hope that it helps people.
Well, I know it's going to help people. And I am going to make sure as many people really start to understand that this is what they need. If they are confused on science, they need to pick up your book. And I don't think after they've read this, you can't. The way the heart is, it is going to be just, they won't be able to go back.
Yeah.
I love it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining me in this hour. I can't believe it already ends. It's like, whoop, we'll have to have you back. I'm so happy that you wrote this. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for really, I love it when I see a book that comes through that really can help awaken so many more souls. And I just wish you the best, that people can keep reading, expanding, and that you'll get your other books written, because it looks like you've got some more to come. There's a lot of good info, but there's a lot more to follow up as well. So
for sure. For sure.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you to our listeners and audience. And please go pick up An End to Upside Down Thinking with Mark Gobert. You will not be disappointed, and it'll be a read you'll keep in your library for a long time. So have a great day, everyone. Thank you for tuning into the Tracy L. Clark Show. Catch us on the iTunes so you can listen to the replay, Spotify. We have 90 outlets to reach you on Transformation Talk Radio, where we will continue to push the boundaries and show you the new ways to experience a new way of living and a new way of being so you can be the best version of you. Thank you, guys, and we'll see you next week on the Tracy L. Clark Show. Thank you for listening to the Tracy L. Clark Show with me, Tracy L., where I teach you how to live your extraordinary life. Tune in every Tuesday, 8 a.m. Pacific, on Transformation Talk Radio, where I combine ministry, science, and spirituality, revealing the steps you need to transcend perceived limitations. As a remarkable leader and pioneer in my field, I, Tracy L., will provide insights energetically and the tools required to move you forward. For more information on my partnership program, check us out at tracylclark.com.